This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. Can you believe it's almost Thanksgiving? Friday, November 20th, 2020. I'm Santita Jackson. I'm coming to you from WCPT, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. Indeed, we are the flagship station for all of progressive talk radio in the United States. It's a pleasure to be with you today and sending all of my love to my AM 950 radio family. Up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in Chicago, we're expecting highs almost spring-like, everybody. 58 degrees. It'll be partly, well, mostly cloudy. But, you know, it'll be kind of like the way it's supposed to be at this time of the year up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, at least in these parts, 39 degrees, partly cloudy. And everybody, it's a pleasure to be with you today. Call or text me at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278, and join my morning stars over on the Santita Jackson and Friends page on Facebook or the WCPT 820 page. I'm so glad to be with you today because we're going to have, it's going to be an action-packed show. We're going to have Congressman Ro Khanna, one of our favorites here, brilliant progressive congressman out of Silicon Valley in Northern California. Progressives are pushing to have him become the person that Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, would name to Kamala Harris's seat. Wouldn't it be wonderful for Bernie Sanders to have some company, a full-on progressive, to go into the U.S. Senate? What do you think about that? You know I'm going to ask him about it at the top of the next hour. And then, of course, Dr. Brenda Wade, we're going to be talking today about Thanksgiving. You know, the holidays are tough for everybody, but especially now in the time of pandemic, as the CDC is telling us, stay home. Stay home. What do you think about that? Will you be doing that? And of course, Dr. Deborah Furholden will be talking to us about COVID-19, along with attorneys C.K. Hoffler and Robert Petillo. They will be sharing with us their thoughts on Tyson's Foods. You remember when they closed the Waterloo plant because of the high incidence of COVID-19 amongst the workers? Well, it turns out, according to a lawsuit, that the managers, the supervisors of these workers were taking bets on who was going to get COVID-19. That's according to the lawsuit. So I want to know what you think about that. I just think it's evil. I have no words for that. I have no words. Who does that? The same people who've been running this COVID-19 response. How about that? No value placed on human life. None. Shame, shame, shame. Got to talk about that today. Got to talk about that. But, of course, Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston is going to give us some good news. But you know what? Let's get to a couple of these headlines. Paul, just before we get to Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, the Dow was up yesterday, 44 points. The NASDAQ closed up 103 points. Very robust. The S&P 500 closed up 14 points. Joe Biden has been confirmed as the Georgia winner after the hand recount. It was a narrow victory, but it was a victory nonetheless. The recount resulted in officials in four counties discovering a total of about 5,800 votes. Trump inched closer, about 1,400 votes closer to Vice President Biden as a result, but he still remains the loser in that particular race. And of course, Vice President Biden edges ever closer officially to becoming the president-elect of the United States. The CDC has warned America, do not travel for Thanksgiving. According to the head of the CDC's Community Interventions and Critical Populations Task Force, she said in a phone call with reporters, in the last week, we've seen over 1 million new cases. Thanksgiving is a week away. The CDC stopped short of mandating that all Americans refrain from traveling. But she said, quote, it's not a requirement, it's a recommendation for the American public to consider. What are you going to do? Let me know. Call me. Text me. Thank you, GWC Injury Lawyers, for the opportunity to text 773-763-WCP2. We're going to try and keep these lines open so you all can get on through because I want to hear your voices today. But you know, it's very interesting. The CDC and many governors and many officials are really stopping short of mandating staying home for the holiday or not traveling for the holiday. And so into the breach steps the Trump White House, which is calling these Thanksgiving restrictions Orwellian. There is a body of thought that says that this is Orwellian, that this is taking away our civil liberties and civil rights. What do you think about that? Even as we hit this grim milestone of more than 250,000 Americans dead from COVID-19, 1 million cases more over the past week, and more than 11 million in the United States thus far. Unbelievable. So what do you think about that? Is this Orwellian? Now, President Trump is being urged to pursue a strategy of chaos and confusion. In the meantime, according to this Common Dreams report, Vice President Biden is urged to go big and fast and fix the broken government. Is the government broken to you, or are our politics? You let me know. 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. Maybe our politics aren't broken. Maybe it's getting refashioned. Nearly 20 dozen groups have demanded that Vice President Biden, when he becomes president, cancel all federal student debt on day one by executive order. Now, people are also asking him to institute, by executive order, Medicare for all. Do you think he should go big, go bold? What do you think? They're saying that he should go for the Green New Deal. We've got to ask Rokana about all of this. Ooh, I cannot wait to hear from him, because they're doing a whole lot on Capitol Hill. Because even though we're still looking at the elections, and we should be, because Georgia is on our minds, everybody, guess what? We still are in the midst of the election season. Some sad news today. Tracy Davis, the daughter of Sammy Davis Jr., just 59 years of age, after a short illness, died. That's right. And she survived by her family, by her mother, actress Mai Britt. You remember, of course, we don't remember, but certainly the stories. It's part of history that, you know, she and Sammy Davis Jr. had an interracial marriage, and they couldn't attend the Kennedy inauguration because of that. They were asked not to do that. They took a lot of heat, and yet there was a lot of love. And the result of that love was three children, and she is the eldest, was the eldest. And so she wrote about her experiences in this book from 1996, Sammy Davis Jr., My Father. God bless you, Tracy. God bless you, Tracy. Wow. Bobby Brown Jr., found dead at the age of 28. What more can Bobby Brown take? My word. His ex-wife, someone who he loved very much, died. Then their daughter died. Now his son. His parents died after short illnesses. It's just a whole lot. My prayers go out to Bobby Brown and his family. So let us get to some good news today. Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, as we find out that one person every 17 seconds dies from COVID-19 in Europe, according to the World Health Organization. I mean, and Governor Newsom is ordering curfews for most California counties. 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. during Thanksgiving. People are really struggling with this, but there is some good news, and I want to hear it from you, Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, today, because we sure do need it.
Grand rising to you, Diva, and to the audience. You know, it's always a pleasure to be with you in the morning. Yes. And, you know, I was just thinking about, the situations that have been compounded by the COVID-19 pandemic, and yet and still, even in the midst of all of that, there's going to be a shopping frenzy happening, starting this weekend and going into the Thanksgiving week and Black Friday and Black Monday. There's going to be a shopping frenzy. Why? Because people find that shopping makes them feel good. You know, so people are making shopping lists, whether they be physical, digital, or mental. They're making lists about what they want to shop about during this time. So I've learned something that sometimes, you know, you don't have to fight that which is, it is. But I would say to people this weekend, you know, just make a thankful list, gratitude list, what you're thankful for. You know, if you're going to shop, I ain't saying don't shop, you know, do your thing. But I would ask you to start writing down what you're thankful for. And here's where people really begin to understand who they are. Some folk are like, what do I have to be thankful for? The fact that you can hear this broadcast is one thing to be thankful for. The fact that you can understand the words that are being said, the news that is being given, is something to be thankful for. You know, you may be in a hospital. They may be in a prison. But if you can hear this, be thankful that you can hear it and comprehend it, because as long as you have breath in your body, you have an opportunity, you have a chance. Be thankful that you can breathe. You may be breathing with the assistance of a machine. be thankful that God has given us the kind of knowledge that we can create a machine that can help you breathe that maybe 50 years ago wouldn't have been there and you wouldn't have that opportunity. Be thankful for your children, the good ones, the bad ones, and the ugly ones. Be thankful for the people that are around you. Be thankful for your friends. Be thankful for your enemies. Because if you didn't have any enemies, that means you ain't doing nothing. You know, be thankful. Be thankful for your victories. Be thankful for your defeats. Be thankful for your joy. Be thankful for your sorrow. What I'm saying is start listing this like a shopping list and then create a shopping list of things that you want to be thankful for. So you know what? I want to have this happening in my life. I'm being thankful for it already. I want to become this way. I'm being thankful for it already. I want X, Y, Z to happen here and there and the other. I want to be involved and engaged in making that happen. I'm going to be thankful already. What I'm saying is be thankful for what we have and be thankful for that which we, as human beings, created in the image and likeness of God, being more creator than creature, have the power to make happen. We have the power to make it happen. Ain't a skyscraper been built that didn't start off as an idea. Ain't a cell phone been put together or designed that didn't start off as an idea. And so what I want you to understand is be thankful for that you can have ideas. Become an idea-generating monster. Write them ideas down and be thankful for them. Well, look, I don't write stuff down anymore. I use my cell phone. Use your digital apparatus. Use your laptop. Do whatever you want. Another way I write stuff down is I talk to people who can handle the kind of ideas that I have. I don't put my million-dollar ideas in 10-cent heads. I learned not to do that a long time ago because all they can do is criticize what they cannot understand and they will destroy what they cannot perceive. So stop putting your million-dollar ideas in 10-cent heads. Well, what do I do? Shut up until you can find a billion-dollar head. You see, go to somebody that's done some more than you. Don't go to anybody that's never done what you're trying to do. You know, be thankful that you have this new knowledge now. Be thankful. Write it down. Shop for gratitude this weekend. Amen.
Amen. I love that. Thank you for that. We need that. You know, my father says that oftentimes we celebrate our cursings while diminishing our blessings. Thank you for that. We need to be grateful, grateful, grateful. And sometimes when you write it down, Emmett Smith, the great running back, NFL running back, says that he always wrote down his dreams because that made them achievable. That made them real. Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, brilliant preacher, theologian, biblical scholar, and political organizer, just tremendous, tremendous human being. And thank you so much for all that you do to lift us up in the mornings. Dr. Deb, ooh, that's right. We all love Dr. Deb. Say hello to Bab, Dr. Deborah Fur Holden, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University. It's not that she doesn't love everybody else, but she and Bab have a special connection. Have a special connection.
Hi, Bab.
Oh, my goodness. One person every 17 seconds dies from COVID in Europe, according to the World Health Organization. And now Governor Newsom is ordering curfews from most of California's counties, 94%, everybody. And the CDC is saying, I'm not going to mandate it. We're not going to do that. But don't travel for Thanksgiving. Don't do this. I just want to know what we should be doing, what we should be doing, because this is a really tricky time of year, Dr. Deborah Fur Holden. I mean, this is a time of year when people harm themselves because they feel it's like COVID-19. You know, it summons forth what you where you're strong and where you're not strong. Where your family ties might be frayed or where they might need mending. There's a lot that goes on during the holidays. And so suicide rates go up. Let me just put it right where it is. But so can healing. So can healing. And so it begins this weekend. Not only the Black Friday sales, as Reverend Dr. Livingston said to us, people start traveling. I mean, like right now. You know, I was about the only person when I lived in New York, I used to come home because I found out that the tickets were so cheap to get home on Thanksgiving morning. I was on that 6 a.m. flight to get to Chicago. And now they're saying that more and more people are showing up at the airports. Could this holiday, Dr. Deborah Verholden, become a super spreader event in the United States?
Yeah, it surely holds that potential. Hmm. You know, this is think about what we saw when we went through the spring break phenomenon. And I saw this in Flint. We had a whole lot of people who said, listen, you know, spring break was like, for most people, it's like mid-April. So we had been maybe four weeks into the sort of, you know, Houston, we have a problem kind of mode. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people, I saw all these Facebook debates going around and people, what are y'all doing for Thanksgiving? I mean, for spring break, are you going or not? People, I paid my money. I can't get my money back. I'm going. You know, people start to rationalize and justify decisions that fly in the face of all of the advice that was given and all of that. So all of these people went to spring break in Florida. And what did we see? Off the chart numbers in Florida. And then those people came back to their communities and became the source of infection in their communities. So all these people that didn't go to Florida for spring break, that did what was the sort of smart thing to do and the, you know, follow the advice of science and all of this, they were impacted by the decisions that other people made to move on with spring break plans as usual. And so I think we're going to see some of that for Thanksgiving. The one thing I will say that I've started to notice is that the shift is that I think the COVID fatigue is now really, I think we, for whatever reason, and maybe it is the fatigue as well, I think it's starting to settle in with people. Because I've been listening to people in my life. I've been mm-hmm. listening to people in my community talk about their plans. And it's interesting to see people move along a continuum. Because there are people who were like, absolutely, you know, we're getting together on Thanksgiving. Like, that's what we do. We're not, you know, people say crazy stuff like, COVID's not going to steal my joy. I'm like, well, okay.
Okay.
You know, but that doesn't make sense to people, right? And what I've started to see now is a lot more people say, Phil, what are your Thanksgiving plans? And they say, child, I'm going to stay right here. And I don't pick too far, you know, because I don't want to, it's a tough time for people. People are lonely. Yeah. People miss their families. People, you know, have been, you know, most of us have been, many of us have been at home this entire time, you know, and so, yeah, but what is still predictable? Anytime you have an increase of people coming in contact with one another, you are going to get an increase in the spread of this virus, period. And it's Thanksgiving. There's no way physically to do any form of Thanksgiving and have everybody masked up and socially distanced the whole time. It's physically impossible. Unless you had an outdoor Thanksgiving and everybody sat at their own table. Well, who's going to do that? Who's going to do that? So, yeah, so we are going to see a spike or some increases in cases following Thanksgiving because enough people are not going to honor all the recommendations that have been given that it's just, it's almost unavoidable unless we could actually mandate single household Thanksgivings.
What do you mean single household Thanksgivings?
Single household. The problem is the multi-household because you're already, you know, if you think about what would take us, get us out of this sort of whatever we would expect to normally happen, mm-hmm. it's when you start bringing multiple households together. So, you know, no one's saying you can't have Thanksgiving in your own household. What we're asking people to do is to not blend households. And that's what people normally do on Thanksgiving. Your sister comes over, your cousin and her family comes over, that one family friend who's single and their family lives out of state comes over and sometimes brings a coworker or a friend. You know, it's the blending of households on Thanksgiving that's the problem. So what I tell people, so as an example, my daughter's in Baltimore. My ex-husband is in Baltimore. My ex-husband sees my daughter My ex-husband has diabetes, and he's had a mountain of just health challenges in the last probably 2 years, mostly around trying to get his diabetes managed, which he's been able to do with diet. But it's taken a toll on him. He's really thin now, much thinner than he said he's ever been in his entire life, even as a young man. And so he's very proactive about, you know, honoring the protocols and not being around people who don't. And so he visits with my daughter about twice a week. So for him, her to go to his house on Thanksgiving, that follows the norm for them. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So they're already around each other two times a week. You know, my daughter's very safe. He's very safe, et cetera. Myself and the other kids wanted to go too, and we all wanted to have Thanksgiving together. Now we're starting to get into a multi-family household Thanksgiving. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then my friend said, well, I want to spend, if you guys are going to be in Baltimore, I want to spend Thanksgiving with you guys. So now we're looking at her and her son. And then I looked and it started to get unwieldy. Mm. And I said, I would hate to be the person who brings coronavirus to my ex-husband's house. If he's going to have us, he's going to struggle with it. Mm-hmm. You know, predictably, he would be one of those people who would, you know, likely not walk around an asymptomatic carrier. He's already got a weakened immune system. He's diabetic. And he's got a couple autoimmune things happening. And so I thought, we can't do this. Like, we just can't do this. As I started to look, I said, I can't guarantee. And then my friend is kind of a COVID denier. You know, she's like, I think they're calling everything COVID. And I think they're blowing this out of proportion. And I think how rigorous people are about adhering to the protocols is inversely related to their belief in whether or not this virus is real.
Oh, my gosh.
If it's not real, they are not going to honor the protocols.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I want you. Oh, absolutely. But I want you to stick around because I want you to weigh in on something else. This is right in your wheelhouse because, you know, these, remember when they closed the Tyson plant at Waterloo, Iowa, because they had the spike in COVID-19 cases? Well, it turns out, according to this lawsuit, that the supervisors were taking bets, winner take all bets, on who was going to get COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Absolutely evil. More of the Santita Jackson Show in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
The Santita Jackson Show coming to you from the flagship radio station, progressive talk radio station in the country, WCPT 820 and AM 950 radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul, sending everybody my love all around the country and all around the world. As you join me on the Santita Jackson and Friends page on Facebook and on WCPT 820's Facebook page, Meddy and Carol, bless her heart, she's out in Beverly Hills, California. Attorney C.K. Hoffler and Robert Patillo and Dr. Deborah Holden, she is up with us early in the morning. Carol, I wish you'd call in so I could hear your beautiful voice. Michael Ann, my sweet, one of my first morning stars, along with Meddy. And Nina, sending you much love. And, you know, they abbreviate my feed, so I can't go back. But I know Willie and Francis and Shirley from Philadelphia and Joyce Ann and all of you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Like and share, everybody. Like and share. Like and share. And spread the word about the show. The show's been growing, 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 thanks to you. And we want to continue to not just help this show to grow, but Progressive Talk Radio. I've got Stephanie Miller behind me. I've got Tom Hartman. I've got Joan Esposito. We've got Brandon Johnson on the weekends. We've got T.O. Hardeman on the weekends. We have got Doris Davenport. We've got a lot of great people, a lot of great voices. And these are your opinions, and this is your station, and we need your support. So please like and share, like and share, like and share. What happened with these Tyson Foods managers? Hundreds of its employees were falling ill. You remember that. And managers and supervisors at this pork processing plant in Waterloo, Iowa, that had to be closed, you remember, at the height of the pandemic, because so many of the workers were getting sick. Well, according to a lawsuit, they were placing bets on how many of their employees would contract the virus. Now, this is a wrongful death lawsuit that was filed last week by the son of a Tyson's Food employee, Isidro Fernandez, who died April 26 after contracting COVID-19. The lawsuit included an alleged bet between managers as an example of the company's negligence toward its workers during the pandemic, along with having employees work elbow to elbow, most without face coverings. It was called an uncontrolled outbreak. I felt it was important to bring those pieces to you. And let me start with you, C.K. Hoffler. I mean, not only are you a lawyer and you deal with cases like this, you are from a family of chicken farmers.
That's correct. Good morning, Santita, and everyone else.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is just unbelievable, but very believable. So I followed very closely what happened with Tyson, because probably 15 or so years ago, my family, it's originally from Virginia, had the largest number of chicken houses and the largest production of eggs for Tyson's Food in Virginia. So
wow.
We raised chickens, and we had roughly 50,000 eggs a day that we sold to Tyson's Food. So we sold that business probably 15 or so years ago, but for many, many years, over a decade, we were their largest producers. And when I say producers, I mean the growers, the people who are actually raising the chickens from when they're little chicks to when the trucks would come and collect them. And then also the separate houses we had were egg houses. So I'm very, very familiar with the inner workings of Tyson. In fact, years ago, Santita, I think we even had some delegations from Africa that your dad was involved in. They would come to our farms because they were trying to set up similar operations in different countries in Africa to increase the production and how they could do it. So it was a pretty large operation. In the process, however, I did get exposure to the processing plants, the working conditions in the processing plants. So when I read this article, I immediately thought back to what I consider to be horrific working conditions in the processing plant, where, just to give you an idea, the workers are really working side by side. And you have big machines that process certain aspects of the chickens. This is a little bit, probably more information that you wanted. But what's important is that people are working side by side. They're massive money-making operations, a lot of times with thousands of employees. So that's the backdrop to what when I saw this lawsuit. And then secondly, of course, I filed something that's kind of analogous recently, a class action on behalf of African-American workers, African-American and Latino workers that work for Amazon in connection mm-hmm. with their failure to provide protective gear to their workers. So when I looked at this case, I said, this is just absolutely horrific and disgusting on many levels. From the standpoint as a lawyer that does catastrophic injury cases, wrongful death cases, negligence cases, all the claims in this lawsuit I've litigated, I'm familiar with. I would say that what makes this case probably more distasteful and disgusting to me is the fact that they had knowledge and notice in the wrongful death component, but that these managers were taking out bets relative to the lives of people who they could have predicted would contract COVID because of the working conditions. They're working so closely together. The chicken plants are really an environment where many diseases spread for the workers because of the, if you're not, they have some kind of makeshift mask situation. They do have masks that were to protect them from some of the diseases that you can get just naturally by being in a processing plant. But that's different from the protective gear that you would need to prevent from COVID. And the fact that they were, it's impossible to do social distancing if they're operating in the plant in the normal conditions. It's just impossible. They'd have to completely change the shift and have the workers work differently. And of course, they wouldn't make money if they were doing that. And so that's where the notion of putting profits over people. But what is just criminal, in my impression, or analogous to criminal conduct, is that these managers, and by the way, managers represent the company. You can't say, well, you know, their managers wasn't us, we just had a few bad managers. They represent the company that these managers were taking out bets They were so callous and inhumane as to take out bets to determine who was going to catch COVID. And by the way, we all know catching COVID can be a death sentence. I mean, Dr. Deborah Verholder is on here, and you talk about that and talks about it every day. So this was really just inexcusable, unacceptable. This is a civil lawsuit. There may be room for criminal charges to be filed. I don't know in Iowa what the code is there, what the criminal codes are there, but this is perhaps one of the worst cases that I've seen of negligence, negligent hiring, negligent supervision, negligent retention, wrongful death. Every claim that I could possibly think of, and some claims that they didn't even put in there, would be appropriate in this lawsuit. Not to mention it's just simply despicable. And we had our president who said that he was going to shield Tyson. Remember, he ordered the plants to stay open, shielding
Absolutely.
Them from litigation. So, of course, when you've got that in the back of your mind, you're thinking you can do and say whatever because you're backed by the president and by the Justice Department if necessary. Now, I don't know if that's going to stick because I don't know if that really was even valid. But
sure.
Just to let you know the sentiment and how those workers must have felt, because for sure there was a discussion, I pretty much would bet, with managers as an act of intimidation, saying basically y'all have no recourse. Come to
Absolutely.
Work and work, or you have no job. And by the way, we'll pay you an extra $500 if you work during COVID, putting your life at risk. You got to understand, people who work in processing plants, it's about the worst work conditions that you get. And so they obviously don't have a choice. They need the money. They have to support their families. So when you have companies that have the money, like Tyson Foods, to put, how much does protective gear cost? You can buy protective gear for 1,000 people for about $1,000. It's so little what they would have had to do, but the social distancing component is where they didn't,
sure.
what they didn't want to do because that would put that would affect their profits.
Robert Petillo, you have a good time on Sunday. You have so much to talk about on WAOK, of course. He's got his own radio show on WAOK, the iconic Black talk radio station, progressive talk radio station in Atlanta. Every Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 12 to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, 10 to 1, Carol, out in California on Pacific Time. WAOK Talk Radio. Okay, what do you make of this? I mean, you absolutely occupy the civil rights space. This, as the Southeastern Regional Director of Rainbow Push, this is so evil, but it sounds criminal. But it's just, I'm just struck by the wickedness of it all. Because, of course, this administration, as so many do, but this administration, absolutely, they were very aggressive and bold with the fact that they were going to shield corporations from prosecution for workers who were coming back who might contract COVID. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, this is one of those things that is always during campaign season that sounds boring, but it's very important. So if you ever hear candidates or campaigns talk about this idea of tort reform, what they're saying is they want to make it more difficult for individuals to be able to sue corporations for the torts, the civil violations they make against individuals, and they want to cap the damages that are possible legislatively, because by doing that, they make it easier for corporations to do business, make it easier for them to exploit workers, and make it easier for them to mitigate their costs, because they know that if it, in the movie Fight Club, they always talked about the fact that if it was cheaper just to let people die than it was to make a small change, then corporations just put that into actuarial table and just put that into the cost of doing business. So when you have tort reform, when you limit the ability of individuals to sue and to make changes that way, what you end up with is a very exploitative system where the worker, where the person who's putting their name and their neck on the line, has very little and limited recourse. This is what state legislative bodies become important, because it's normally regulated on the state level, not on the federal level. And and states such as Georgia and the South, one of the reasons you've seen this new great migration where people are moving from the industrial Midwest, from the Northeast to the South, to Nashville, to Charlotte, to Atlanta, to Birmingham, is because we have laws on the books to make it more difficult to sue employers. We have fewer labor laws in the books. We make it more difficult for corporations or for the working people to organize. We can make it more difficult to sue employers for what they do to individuals. So we have to keep these in mind, that when politicians start talking about we're going to cut regulations, those are the regulations they're talking about cutting. When they talk about having a business-friendly environment, they are talking about making it more easy for businesses to exploit workers. When they talk about economic growth, we have to balance that against the needs of workers to be able to protect themselves, because we've seen what happens when we have unbridled capitalism. We constantly talk about the ghost of the dangers of socialism and communism and blah, blah, blah. Well, the dangers of unbridled capitalism leads to serfdom, leads to plebiscites, leads to slavery, leads to child labor, when we're having children changing bobbins in the looms. So as we hear attorneys such as D.K. Hoffler, that is that frontier. Because even if they don't listen to the moral argument, to the hermeneutic argument, they'll always listen to their pocketbook. And when you can sue somebody out of existence, that is a legislative action, and that's why we have to continue voting. And, of course, I'm going to plug the January 5th runoff election in Georgia, where we have to ensure we have senators in office that can push for legislation that makes it easier for workers to sue and defend themselves.
Hmm. Dr. Deborah Verholden, when you hear about a case like this, as an epidemiologist, as someone who occupies the public health space, wow, what do you say?
Well, I think one of the things people often do, and this has happened a lot during COVID, we dealt with all these racial disparities in COVID, et cetera, and everybody kept pointing to implicit bias, unconscious bias, right? Because that sounds more digestible for people, this notion that people have these biases and driving their behavior and action, et cetera, that are hidden from view to them. You know, that feels digestible to people. So what do we want to do? We want to give people unconscious bias testing and training and feedback so that those biases that they have, like how they were prioritizing white patients over black patients when they showed up to the hospital for care. Everybody said, well, you've got these very well-meaning healthcare workers and they're just doing the best that they can, but we've all got these hidden biases. Well, I say, well, yeah, some of that is true. But what we also have is just flat out overt racism, bias, and other things that are not implicit, but explicit. And I think anytime you hear of a case like this, it just points to the fact that we're not dealing with this whole innocent cast of characters, just everybody out here doing the best that they can. You know, people have a lot of awareness and consciousness about things, and they choose to act in very nefarious ways, even in the face of that. So I think this just points to that and underscores my point that, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care if you accidentally shoot me or if you shoot me on purpose. I'm still shot. The impact is no less different for me. And so I think we really need to start holding people to account for outcome. If you got a massive outbreak at your plant, I don't care if it happened on purpose or by accident, you need to be held accountable. Because we will never know what's in people's hearts. We'll never know what their real intentions were. We'll never know what was hidden from their view or what they were in the back room making bets on. But we have to hold the people to account for the actions and the outcome. And I think this example just underscores that.
You know, I'm mindful of the fact that this is a wrongful death lawsuit, CK, filed on behalf of a beloved family member who will not be at that Thanksgiving table. Let me just get to the human side of this for a hot second. To hear that, you know, you see these basic people, and maybe because I'm from, like you, we're from working people, basic working people, right? My great-grandmama, I remember going to her job with her as she cleaned Mrs. Marshall's house when I was like 3 and 4 years of age, right? I'd sit and have tea with her when my great-grandmama cleaned and cooked for her. So, you know, I have a heart for my grandmother, who you knew, Gertrude, who just passed away 3 years ago. She served you food at the VA hospital. You never know who you're talking to. You never know. And you don't know who this person is producing, right? This man goes to work And they are hearing about COVID-19. They're beginning to get alarmed, but they feel powerless. They can't. They got to go to work. They don't have a choice. Like you just said, I don't have a choice. And they're supervisors. And they're asking them, some of them, who may or may not be documented. You know what I mean? I mean, they're struggling to survive. So they may or may not press about the PPEs. And others who feel protected or just feel like, you know what, where are the PPEs? These people they didn't have the PPEs, and then they're placing bets on who's going to get this deadly disease or not. CK, I only have a couple of minutes left here, but you've got them. What is that?
Well, that's awful. And frankly, that is why jurors award punitive damages. Punitive damages are awarded when jurors want to punish and deter behavior. It is unacceptable and inexcusable for managers to do that. And by the way, another fact that I learned in this case and reading the complaint, some of the managers were taking time off because they were protecting themselves from COVID, of course. They just wanted the rank and file workers not to be protected. It's just, you know, it's all around inexcusable. It really is. It really just is. And this is a case that, quite frankly, I believe has the climate or the fact pattern where punitive damages could be awarded, because Tyson Food has to be held accountable because they kept managers there who were doing this. There is knowledge when you are in this plant. My understanding, people complained about it, and they did nothing about it. And that's why you have negligent retention. Now, all these types of facts, and I'm sure that more will come out as the case progresses. But I do believe that this is going to, we're going to see a number of corporate malfeasance cases in the civil context where corporations and companies failed to provide protective gear because they didn't want that to be the money that they have to spend on that, and putting in place the social distancing policy to eat into their profits. Because and you find it usually with companies where you have assembly line workers or people working in close proximity so that they can get their job done, such as processing plants, such as like an Amazon, people working in warehouses, working very close together, sweating. Because we've heard Dr. Verhoeven talk about about the transmission of this deadly virus. People working close together, sweating, lifting boxes, doing things, cutting. And by the way, another thing with people work in processing plants, many, many people are injured in processing plants because of the conditions. You know, they lose fingers. They lose a lot of things. It's just a very, very bad situation. But Tyson is going to be held accountable in this case. So you never know what happens with the case, how it progresses, but I certainly hope it gets to a jury, and I certainly hope that justice is done.
You know, because the general, I mean, as you all go, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today, because as you go, the gentleman who you were suing on his behalf, suing Amazon, he found out one of his workers had COVID. He suspected she had COVID-19, encouraged her to get tested. She got tested. When she came back and said, I'm positive, he was told not to tell the workers.
Absolutely.
You're about to be a trillion-dollar company.
Anyone.
What? Who?
Yeah. Not to tell anyone, not to alarm the workers. All of that. That is, and there's some similar facts, as I'm told, in this case. You know, they just didn't want to alarm, but the taking bets on the lives and on the backs of workers, that's inexcusable, unacceptable, reprehensible, and just something that the company has to be held accountable for. Because if you've got managers working there, and that is their mentality, and that is their focus, and that is how they treat their employees, and they think it's funny that they can take out bets to see who's going to catch COVID, then that gives you an idea of the culture, the climate within which these workers are working. And it's probably devastating for them. And they may not have a choice. They need the money. They may not have a choice. We don't know about their immigration status. But there are a lot of people who don't have immigration problems who are working in those conditions who just simply need the money, have to pay. They have to support their families.
Absolutely.
And they're put in the unfortunate position of making a choice. Do I live to get this money to take back to feed my family, or do I run the risk of catching COVID and then I take it back home and give it to my family? That's awful.
Absolutely.
That's terrible.
Absolutely. Think about this case, everybody, today. Think about it. This is why we need two senators two new senators, two Democratic senators, not just because they're Democrats, but because they're progressive and they stand for people. Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock down in Georgia has done magnificent work for his community. We need him in the U.S. Senate. And John Ossoff wants to do great work. He's been a tremendous investigative reporter fighting for the little guy. They are
absolutely.
These Senate seats are on the line. I've got Attorney Darrell Jones, your colleague, that is you, Attorney Robert Petillo, and you, Attorney C.K. Hoffler. And, of course, he is a friend of yours, Dr. Deborah Furholden, and a dear friend of ours. I've got about 4 minutes, well, actually three. Talk to me, a Transformative Justice Coalition. There's just so much going on. At least we have Georgia out the way. At least Georgia is about to be certified today. Good news.
Good morning, Santita. Always a pleasure to speak with you in the morning. And yes, you are correct. Georgia will be certified today. That's the exciting part. But, Georgia, we must finish the job. It's not over. We still have a runoff election to go. And for this runoff election, Santita, the message is we are all Georgia. Wherever you live, you are Georgia. Why? Because you can help Georgia participate in this runoff election that's coming up. They have got to finish the job of what they've started. They've done a wonderful job getting people to the polls, and now it's time to do that last step of getting folks out to the polls for this runoff election. I tell you, you know, voter registration ends on December the 7th, so we are in a big push right now to be certain that people are registered. We know that in Georgia that they wrongfully removed 180,000 voters who are actually still living at their address. So we're encouraging everyone in Georgia, if you know anyone in Georgia, tell them to go to My Voter Page Georgia and take a look and be certain that you are still registered to vote there. That's important. Mm-hmm. That gets us into the game. It gets you into the field so we can be certain that you get your absentee ballot and able to vote. Also remember that your absentee ballot isn't guaranteed. They're not going to automatically send it to you. You've got to request that absentee ballot in order to receive it from Georgia. And again, you go back to that My Voter Page Georgia to get that absentee ballot. We're encouraging people, you know, we're concerned about the Postal Service, so when it's time for you to return that absentee ballot, you know, you can take it to a drop box in Georgia and return it. You can take it to the Board of Elections in Georgia and return it. We do not encourage you to mail it at this point because of the mail and the post and the Christmas season that's here. Everything's going to be slowed up. But we have coming up, Santi, what I think is awesome, you know, we have coming up Thanksgiving. So here's what we have happening. Following Thanksgiving, we're going to have the Black Voter Friday, okay? So instead of Black Friday, it's going to be Black Voter Friday. We want the blacks to go to the polls, start getting your absentee ballots in line, and start voting on Friday. That Saturday, it's going to be Small Business Saturday, and we want small businesses to tell their employees about the election, to tell their customers that are coming in about the election. Get involved. Get people active with regards to that. That's going to be followed by Sunday's Soul to the Polls encouragement. They don't have voting on Sundays in Georgia, but we're asking the churches to encourage the souls to the polls and then come back with Cyber Ballot Monday, where everyone should be texting their friends, emailing their friends, Facebooking their friends, telling them to plan their vote and vote their plan. Georgia, we need to rock this thing. Rock this thing. And on December 26th, their only Saturday for early in-person voting, we are going to have a holiday party at the polls. Come on.
All right,
get
now.
Out there and start voting in Georgia. Thank you so much, Peter.
Blessings to you. Transformative Justice Coalition coming up with Ro Khanna. Will he go to the Senate? Back in a minute. We'll find out.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. You know, we've got Congressman Ro Khanna up here. We're trying to push him into the U.S. Senate. That's right. The great Congressman Ro Khanna. We're going to get to him in a couple of minutes. Friday, November 20th, 2020. This is the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. Indeed, we're the flagship station for progressive talk. Following me is Stephanie Miller and then Tom Hartman and then Joan Esposito. And throughout the weekend, you can hear Commissioner Brandon Johnson from the Cook County Board of Commissioners, and you can hear Dick Kay, the iconic Dick Kay, and Doris Davenport, and T.O. Hardeman, so many on this station. And, of course, AM 950 Radio up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. That's right. I want to. That's the voice of Progressive Minnesota and throughout Wisconsin and everywhere. And, of course, all of my listeners and watchers over here on Facebook on the Santita Jackson and Friends page and on WCPT 820's page. I want to hear from you today. We're going to hear from Congressman Ro Khanna in a hot second. In Chicago, we're expecting a high of 58 degrees, positively spring-like, everybody, mostly cloudy, though. Minneapolis, St. Paul, a high of 39 degrees. That's more like it, partly cloudy. The Dow had closed up 44 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 103 points. The S&P 500 closed up 14 points. And guess what? Russell Wilson had a great night last night. That's right. The Seahawks 28 over the Cardinals 21. Amen. And guess what? Joe Biden was confirmed as the winner of Georgia's election after this hand count. Wow. Of course, President Trump was able to narrow the count, but not that much. That much. The CDC is warning America, do not travel for Thanksgiving. Are you going to travel? This could be a super spreader event. Do you really want to take this into your family's home, everybody? Let's be careful, everybody. In the meantime, President Trump's White House is calling these Thanksgiving restrictions Orwellian, even though the CDC was careful not to mandate that you not travel. They just said, we highly, strongly suggest that you not travel. And it's happening in this context, everybody. One person every second, every 17 seconds in Europe is dying from COVID-19. Now we've got pretty much a stay-at-home order in California. I'm going to ask Congressman Khanna about that in a hot second. And so we got a lot to talk about. And, of course, we've been talking about this Tyson Foods controversy, this wrongful death lawsuit filed by the son of a Tyson Foods employee, Isidro Vicente Fernandez, who died April 26th. It turns out, according to this lawsuit, there was an alleged betting ring between managers. They were betting who was going to get COVID while they were taking time off so that they could be safe from COVID. You cannot make this stuff up. Dedicating the show today to Tracy Davis, my friend, the author of Sammy Davis Jr., My Father. Indeed, his eldest child died after a short illness. Just shocking. And Bobby Brown Jr., wow, found dead in Los Angeles at the age of 28. How much more can that man take? Ex-wife, daughter, now son, parents. A whole lot. Before we get to you, Congressman Khanna, Shapiro, you're not taking any more orders for Thanksgiving?
And we are full and booked for the entire Thanksgiving season.
Okay.
But I wanted to thank the audience for all the support that they gave us this season. But we'll be back for Christmas, so get in early and get in fast.
And we'll talk to you on Monday about that.
Yes.
And tomorrow.
Christmas
That's
is
right.
going to have a, yes. Yes. And so I'm excited, and I just wanted to thank everyone for supporting me this holiday season, and we look forward to helping you for Christmas.
Oh, amen, amen. Well, I've got one of my favorite people in the world with me right now, Congressman Ro Khanna from Silicon Valley. Now, you know what? I just said I have to ask him about this. I know legislatively you're working very hard and you are pushing for so much. I'm for coronavirus relief, the Green New Deal. You're saying that, look, progressives delivered this victory along with African Americans to Vice President Biden. So now is the time for us to push. I appreciate the fact that you are putting your foot on the gas, but at this time, people also are saying that, you know what, progressives like me, and I'm not alone, are saying, wait a minute, he needs to be named to replace Kamala Harris. But, you know, first let me say hello to you. I know there are a lot of good people who have their hats in the ring, but look, I'm allowed to express my wishes. How are you doing, Congressman Ro Khanna?
Well, Zatina, what a great morning to be talking to you. And, you know, you're one of my closest friends. But more than that, I have such admiration for you and your show. And the admiration I have is you stick to principle. And we need to make sure that at this moment that we don't forget the people who voted for us. I mean, this criticism of Black Lives Matter activism, when Black Lives Matter protests and activism is what won Joe Biden the presidency, with turnout in Milwaukee, Detroit, Atlanta, and Philadelphia, it's a let's not forget that it's young people and the huge turnouts in the black community that won the race. And we need to make sure we now actually have an agenda that delivers. And, of course, it's flattering to be mentioned for the Senate seat that Bernie Sanders carried the state. My big thing is whoever gets picked should be clearly for a Medicare for All, for ending the filibuster, for a Green New Deal, for a $15 minimum wage, for a real commitment to police violence reform, including getting rid of qualified immunity and changing the standard of force. I mean, California needs to be bold. And there are a number of other candidates who would be good progressives, bold progressives. But what I hope doesn't happen is just default to the establishment pick.
Well, see, that is, and I think that's why we even have to push for who fills this seat, to be quite frank with you, because I think it's important to have a progressive there, because I think that we need to recognize the power of progressives in this cycle. Progressives have really been pushing the political needle for the past several years. Black women pushed the needle in 2016. We did the same thing in 2020. Progressives have been stepping to the plate 2016, 2020. We are here, and we need representation. Bernie Sanders should not be alone on the floor. And we're seeing the names that have been floated for these cabinet picks. They are concerning because they are corporatist, and they might not support the Green New Deal. They might be war profiteers, or certainly supportive of more war and less peace. I just think that it's very, very important for us to have our voice and to have a seat at that table, not just to mention congressman. So, I mean,
well,
so tell me, talk to me.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Well, one of the challenges is, look, at the two people who had almost became president and had huge support, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. I mean, the fact that they're having to fight to get into the cabinet and may not even be in the cabinet, I think, is appalling. I mean, Bernie Sanders won the first three states. Elizabeth Warren had 20% at least of the electorate, and you're going to now have a possible cabinet that does not have representation from a huge source of the party. And I think it, you know how it is. I mean, progressives, the African-American community, all have to fight. They have to fight for every inch of representation. Nothing is automatic. And so, you know, I think if there are people in the, if they were picked, a Barbara Lee, a Karen Bass, I'd be thrilled. And I've said that publicly. But if it goes to one of the longstanding politicians who just happen to have paid their dues for and aren't for these policies, that's what's wrong, especially given Bernie Sanders carried the state.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm adamant, I am, about having a progressive name to this California seat. That's very, very important to me. And you cannot lose. You cannot lose by having your hat in the ring, Congressman Khanna. You can only win because one of the things that I appreciate about you, you too are one of my dearest friends. I consider you to be that. I appreciate the fact that wherever you go, you lift up the progressive banner and our issues. That's very important, and I don't want that to get lost in the sauce. So what is the progressive agenda? What should progressives be pushing for as we are hopefully moving into this new administration come January 20th?
The first thing we should be pushing for is a big stimulus. You know, I have been pushing, as have some others, for $2,000 a month, and we still haven't passed that out of the House, let alone the Senate. I had said to some controversy back in October that we should take at least some deal to get relief to people. People are without food, they're without rent. And, you know, now it's been months. So we've got to get stimulus done. I don't understand how that's not every day, every morning, the first agenda. The second thing we have to do is expand health care. I mean, we're in a pandemic, and we have done nothing to actually expand access to health care. We have to invest in our essential workers. I mean, the people who are actually going to work at risk to their lives, they are not benefiting in the pay. They aren't having their worker conditions protected. And then we need to figure out how do we, is, you know, one of the things I'm really passionate about for a progressive agenda is expanding access to the wealth generation and innovation economy. There are all these people who work on Zoom and technology, and these tech companies in my district are doing really well. But almost only 1% of that money is going to Black or Latino entrepreneurs. They aren't getting many of these jobs in technology. And so there's a whole exclusion from the digital economy and the wealth generation of the 21st century. And progressives really need to talk about how we're going to create those new jobs in communities left out.
Well, you know, you represent the Silicon Valley community, at least in part, and you have tremendous standing in that community, and you've used that standing and your position now as a public servant to target HBCUs. Could you tell us more about that?
I'm proud of some of that work we've done. We worked with Zoom and actually Representative Clyburn, and we wanted to go to a HBCU, and we did Claflin in South Carolina, and they created a commitment, not just for scholarships, but for jobs, to say, look, we're going to actually, so we see the talent here, and we're going to hire folks. Here's what I don't understand. Why can't we do that at the 100-plus HBCUs, have partnerships with the tech companies, have a goal to have a million, over the next 5 years, a million young African-Americans in tech careers, tech jobs, having funding for starting businesses. The ambition is there. Young black men and women actually study computer science more. Think about this. They study computer science more than white or Asians in terms of their interest. The problem is not the pipeline. The problem is they don't have then the access to the jobs. And this is where we have to just recognize that there is systematic exclusion and fix that.
We're talking with Congressman Ro Khanna from California. He has this tremendous progressive agenda. One of the things that has touched me about his work, reaching out to black colleges, HBCUs, and not just scholarships, but guaranteeing jobs. That's important. But the Green New Deal, Medicare for all. I mean, there is so much that needs to be on the agenda right now. And I appreciate the fact, Congressman Khanna, that you are saying that this is not the time for us to pump the brakes. You're saying that we need to accelerate. I saw your Democracy Now! Interview, and I thought it was fantastic. You were saying, look, it is time for us now to get coronavirus relief. It is time for us now to get $2,000 to Americans. This is just basic. But why do you think that now is the time for us to push? Some people are saying, look, we just, what is, give me the counter argument. What are people telling you? Why are people telling, some people are telling you, slow down, hold on, we just, let us get in here. What do they mean?
Yeah, the counter argument is, oh, it was a close election, the country's divided, we have to have a coalition form a government that takes incremental steps. The problem is that people aren't divided on the economic issues. They aren't divided on the fact that there are evictions and that they're having a difficult time making mortgage payments and that they're having a difficult time putting enough food on the table for their kids. That is not a blue state or red state problem. That is an economic problem that is affecting minority communities as much as it's affecting rural communities. Small businesses disproportionately are shutting down in black and brown communities, so the impact is worse. But they're also shutting down in small towns across this country. And I think that if we have a bold economic agenda that says we understand the economic pain, we want to put businesses, small businesses back, make sure they can stay in business. We want to put people back to work. We want to make sure you don't get kicked out of your house or your apartment. That will resonate across the ideological spectrum. And if we don't do that, we risk the mistake of 2008, where there was an inadequate stimulus, a slow recovery, and that was one of the many factors that led to the rise of the Tea Party and to Donald Trump.
What do you think we need to, what should we be doing? I mean, because many people feel that November 3rd, I'm done. It's set, except for Georgia, of course. So I can relax now. And my argument has always been that the voting process is the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end. Now your elected officials, these elected officials need to hear from you. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I think that you can call your senators, you can call your members of Congress in your home state, and and let them know that you're watching and you want something done that's bold, and you want to make sure that it just doesn't go to business. We're very good at finding the money to bail out corporations, bail out businesses, and it doesn't often go to the small business owner, and it doesn't go to the actual families that need the assistance. And so if they need to hear from people, and if they don't hear from folks, the default often is something that is inadequate.
Talking with Congressman Ro Khanna from California, we want to know, okay, if you do not go to the Senate this time, what are some of your legislatively in the Senate or in the U.S. House of Representatives, what are some of your goals, like immediate goals? I mean, and how can we help you to get these balls over the line, if you will?
Well, the first goal is we're working on the stimulus and getting the $2,000 a month. Even if we don't get $2,000 a month, I want some direct cash payment to American families. The second thing is we're working on getting contact tracers hired. If we need about 3,000 contact tracers to try to get this pandemic under control, and that would create a lot of employment. And actually, there are a lot of jobs out there that the government needs that would help us with the pandemic, and that would create employment. And so we're working on getting that done. We're working on this Essential Workers Bill of Rights that Elizabeth Warren and I have proposed, saying if you're the person who's making sure that the Amazon packages get the people, if you're the one making sure that the grocery stores are fully stocked, then you deserve a higher pay. You deserve to be treated fairly as an employee. You deserve child care so that you can go to work. And that we should do more than rhetorically celebrate workers. We actually need to treat them fairly. So those are a few of the things that we want to get done in the first 100 days.
We need to have those things done in the first 100 days. But now let me ask you this. There seems to be a tension between progressives and centrist Democrats. And look, all families have their tensions. We're all going into the Thanksgiving season, the holiday season, so we do know that. But why is it, how are progressives responding to our centrists who are saying, you cost us our seats, when it was the progressives who actually won seats and won districts and won states for the Democrats? How do you handle that? I mean, how do you interpret that? What do you do with that?
We respond with facts. We respond to the fact that young people turned out in record numbers. The black community turned out in record numbers. And it was not just older black voters. It was young black activists turned out in record numbers. Mm-hmm. I fundamentally believe if it weren't for the horrific death and murder of George Floyd and the activism that followed, that we probably would not have seen the record turnouts we did. It was the mobilization of the Black Lives Matter movement and young people on the streets that got the turnouts in across this country. And so to blame activists for a loss of a district in a place where those activists probably weren't even there is just absurd. And you can't censor the language of activism. I mean, I don't really understand it. I mean, it would be as if Abraham Lincoln were out there complaining that the abolitionist language was too intemperate, that he couldn't sell that to the country. He didn't mm-hmm. complain or whine. He went and he gave some beautiful speeches about how he would bring the country together around those principles. So if you don't agree with the language of activism, and I don't agree with every phrase or every slogan of activism, don't criticize the activists. That's not their job. Figure out how you can articulate the vision in a way that's compelling. Bernie Sanders does this all the time. Joe Biden actually did it. They talked about their respect for law enforcement, but holding them accountable and how to budget our values. But I don't really understand this instinct of blaming the activists of our party.
And the energy of the party. I'm like, are you throwing water on all of this heat? This is absolutely, well, it's unacceptable, and it's not going to help us to move this along, because I do believe that with 70 plus million votes that President Trump has been able to garner, he is a force to be reckoned with. He had 70 million plus pro-Trump votes, And I don't think we should ignore that. And in the light of that, where do we go from here? What, just again, what are some of the things that you would ask us to call on our congresspersons in both houses, the senators and the representatives to do?
Well, first, you're absolutely right. I mean, Donald Trump's turnout shocked me. He got more votes than I anticipated, and the difference was our energy, our turnout. So if we disappoint these young people, if we disappoint the energy and the people marching on the streets, we are going to have a tough midterm. We're going to have a tough reelection. We've got to get that energy to stay, and the energy will stay if we deliver. And I think that the call should be deliver for us, deliver on student loan forgiveness, deliver on which, by the way, black women have the most of. And I don't understand this argument saying, oh, well, it's only 35% or 40% of the country that goes to that takes out loans. So you don't want to do anything for them? I mean, this is not an either or choice. You can raise wages, you can have unionization, and you can also make sure that communities have the opportunity for wealth creation. I mean, if you have people in minority communities going to college and having so much debt, that I read somewhere that the average white family that doesn't have a college degree actually has more wealth than the average black family with a college degree, and that's partly because of the loans, the debt, then how are you ever going to have wealth generation in a community? So we need to push for student loan debt relief. We need to push for higher minimum wage. We need to push for better unionization laws. We need to push for expansion of healthcare. We need to push for actual investments in renewable energy that's going to create jobs in communities and communities of color. And I think we have to hold us accountable. What did you achieve in the first 100 days, first 6 months? And don't just say, you know, well, we couldn't do anything because of McConnell. That's not, you know, that's not acceptable. I mean, you can't just give up. Now, if you fight, and if we had votes in the House and you fight it every day, the president's out there, president like Biden, saying we're going to do this, and it becomes obvious that McConnell is just dragging things, that'll become obvious to people. But you can't use that as an excuse not to advance the agenda.
Congressman Ro Khanna from California. Hat is in the ring. Got to make him senator. I love it. I love it. I love it. Sending you much love. My love to you and the family for Thanksgiving. Can't wait to have you back on the Santita Jackson Show.
To your whole family.
God bless you. God bless you. Coming up, Dr. Brenda Wade on the Santita Jackson Show.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. Tremendous, tremendous conversations that we've had today about Tyson's Foods, about... Oh, my goodness, about these managers allegedly taking bets on who was going to catch COVID-19. How heinous. And then, of course, we were talking with Congressman Ro Khanna, just tremendous progressive out of California. Will he be named to the Senate post? After you heard him, I think you know he's someone that we need. Someone that we need. And so, and there's some wonderful people whose hats are in the ring, quite frankly, but I'm glad that his hat is in the ring, and he does certainly merit your attention and, you know, support, quite frankly. So, everybody, it's Friday, November 20th, 2020. We are just 6 days away, 6 days away from Thanksgiving. And for many of us, we're excited. I'm coming to you from WCPT, the nation's progressive talk radio station flagship. We're the largest progressive talk radio station in the country. AM 950 Radio serves all of Minnesota, out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, AM 950 Radio. And throughout this region and this country and the world, I am on the Santita Jackson Show. I want you to join my morning stars over here on the Santita Jackson and Friends page and on WCPT 820's Facebook page. Okay, now you know what? We had to abbreviate it a bit, but it's no less important because you know what? We're looking at Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving is a lot. This going into this holiday season, which really begins now, it's a lot in a normal year. But in a year of pandemic, a year at a time in which we're watching a surge in coronavirus cases and COVID-19. We've now had more than 250,000 people die during this pandemic in the United States alone. 1 million more new infections over the past week. 11 million infections overall. 3 million people who are reputed to be contagious. There's a lot going on. And a lot of us are going from saying, you know what, I'm just going to go out here and live my life. Some of us don't believe that COVID-19 exists. And others of us are too afraid to move. Well, you know what? I think that, you know, you shouldn't be afraid. You should be cautious. And we need to be aware that we're living in a time that is stressful, because that's what the holidays do to us. They reveal what we've done well, what we've not done so well. And even as the CDC will not mandate travel, they're saying do not travel for Thanksgiving. So what are we to do? How do we have mindful Thanksgivings? Thanksgivings filled with gratitude. How do we make it through? Because some of us, Dr. Brenda Wade, the author of What Mama Couldn't Tell Us About Love, some of us are not going to be with anybody. Some of us will be in our homes alone, or we're not going to have that Thanksgiving dinner that some of us last year were dreading with 10, 15, 20, 50 people or more. Some of us might just, it might just be us. You might be alone, or you might have one or two people. Or there might be, there are 250,000 plus people who will not have someone at that table this year and never will have them again. Someone who was there last year. Wow. What a time. Mm. Dr. Brenda Wade, think about, I think about those things. I've got some friends who have made their transitions because of COVID-19. And I said, wow.
Yeah.
One of my girlfriends who I was going to have her make me some greens. And I said, I can't call her this year. She is gone. Wow.
Santita, what you're saying is so real. And there are so many people who are, first of all, yes, affected by losses this year, whether people pass because of COVID-19 or any other reason. We have many, many losses. I lost a dear aunt a month ago, and it is hard during the holidays for those people that you're used to being with, not being there. But then the other thing is there's the anxiety. What if? What if? What if I go to the grocery store? What if somebody drops something off and, you know, I haven't washed the box or whatever it is? There's so many extra steps now we have to take to be safe. So it creates more anxiety. And the most important thing I want people to remember is that loneliness is something that we are not designed for. As human beings, we are not designed to be alone. Yeah. We are actually designed to be with other people. Our brains are designed for connection, communication. They're designed for us to be communal people. That's really what, and we're those same ancient people. Our brain is that same ancient brain where people used to live in caves together. Now people just live in homes together. But if you are alone or isolated, it's especially hard because we're just not designed for it. So we have to find ways to create connection, to communicate, to have a way to contact other people that feels as real as possible. So one of the things I talked about with Santita, our last conversation, is that remember that the winter is the low light time of the year, and the low light is hard on the brain. And then we've got isolation, and then we've got anxiety about staying healthy, and then we may have losses, those who aren't with us this year. So all of those things contribute to how we feel. We can't get out and take those walks we're used to taking because we're told to stay inside. We can't get out to the gym. We can't go do, you know, the things that we used to do that made us feel. Can't go to the office, can't go to work. So we have so many things we can't do. We have to build a list of things we can do and we will do to replace what isn't there. And we can do that. We can do that. But first, be aware, this is serious, and we need to take it seriously.
So, I think we do, because we are social. And every night, if you look at the news, you're getting a death count. you're getting an infection count. I mean, it's not empowering at all. I mean, I realize that they need to tell us what is happening, but they're not telling us about therapeutics. They're not telling us about vitamin D and the fact that you need to take vitamin D, that you need to take vitamin C.
I mean,
most people who get COVID-19 do not die from it. Most people survive it.
Right.
You know, a small fraction of people who contract it die from it, and it is a horrible death. That having been said, there are some things that you can be doing to empower your body to fight this should you get it. Dr. Wade.
And to take those vitamins prophylactically. If you take them, your immune system is stronger. You are more likely not to contract because the body does have its own immune capabilities to keep them strong. So I so appreciate what you just said, Santita. You took the words right out of my mouth because there are things we can do. So I just want to run down the list if it's okay. Because the light is low, create your own light.
But, you know, because also emotionally, I was giving you like the physical, you know, like minerals and things. That's important. But
the physical
many of us, we don't have the mental health. We don't do that checklist, the spiritual checklist that we really need right now. Dr. Wade.
We do need it, Santita. Absolutely. Now, one of the most important things is because the light is low outside, turn on that light inside. Make sure that every single night before you go to bed, you light a candle or you turn on a bulb that has a nice soft light and sit there just for 60 seconds and repeat to yourself, I am light and energy. I am light and energy. So that you mentally imprint in your mind that light is coming from outside, inside. Let it grow. Let it grow. Let it grow. Keep the light on as long as you can so that we turn on light. Now, what you need is not the ordinary light bulb. If you can afford it, buy full spectrum light bulbs. Why? Because they mimic the energy that we get from the sun. They're full spectrum. If you have just one part of the spectrum, the brain doesn't respond as well. So if you can get full spectrum bulbs, get candles, you need light. Turn on all the light you can so that your brain can get some light and make that inner light go on by using the thought, I am light and energy, and see it. See the light right in front of your forehead. Even with your eyes closed, you can see light, and we need to imprint it into the brain. That actually has been scientifically proven to help. It fights depression. It fights anxiety. It turns on more of those good neurotransmitters that we know we need during this time of year. And Santita, what you said about the body system needing a boost, yes, you do need your vitamins and minerals, especially, as Santita said, D and E. If you can afford to hit that vitamin store, or go out to wherever they sell healthy vitamins, do your best not to get synthetic vitamins. Turn that on. Now, remember, vitamin D also comes in fish oil. If you can eat some oily fish, get some sardines, get some canned salmon, get some fresh cod, or any way that you can get vitamin D from fish, eat that. It will definitely help. But if you can get some good multivitamins with minerals and then add the capsules of D and E, you're going to boost the immune system. It'll help you stay healthy, and God forbid you get sick, it'll help your immune system fight it off. Now, the next thing is we need exercise. Because we're inside, it's hard for me because I'm used to taking a walk, a long walk, almost every day, Santita, 2 or 3 miles. So what I've started doing is I'm walking the floor. Walk the floor in your house. Do some resistance training. That's where you sit on the floor and you put your arms behind you and you do these backwards push-ups. Then you do forwards, little mini push-ups or full push-ups. But keep moving. If you're watching television or watching a movie, don't sit. Stand up
and raise your legs up and down while you watch. The body needs exercise. And what happens when we exercise? We start, if you break a sweat, you're producing endorphins and more serotonin. Those are the things that make you feel good. They fight anxiety and depression. When we're creating those neurotransmitters by boosting the brain. So get that exercise. I don't care what you have to do. Now, you guys know that online, there are all kinds of exercise programs. Just go online and find one and make sure you do your stretches. The stretches get all the kinks out of the body and it releases those muscles that have pent up a lot of the kind of stale energy in the muscle. We need that too. So break a sweat, stretch it out. Super important. Now, here's one other thing. If you're talking to loved ones, don't just do it on the phone. If you can at all, turn on your camera, turn on your FaceTime, turn on your Zoom, turn on Skype, turn on the camera on WhatsApp, whatever you can do to actually see the other person. Because when the brain can see someone you care about, see someone you love, it boosts those neurotransmitters because you're going, oh, internally, the brain is so intelligent. It goes, oh, there's someone I love, someone I feel safe with. And it gives you a bigger boost even than hearing their voice, Santita. So please do that and get those vitamins and minerals. Eat healthy food. Your body is a finely tuned vehicle. Don't put garbage in the tank. Put healthy food in the tank. And I know that that's a challenge during COVID for a lot of us. But we can still upgrade the quality of our food. That means avoid the junk food as much as you may want it. Avoid the junk food. Limit it to, okay, Friday night, I'm going to junk out. Okay, you can have your junk food Friday night. But don't eat it every day because it puts you behind the eight ball. Your body's now having to fight to get those toxins out of your body just when your body is facing the low light. Please. Eat the healthiest food you can. And the very last thing on this list is treat your mind and your spirit. We have body, emotions, mind, and spirit. Your mind needs all the positive energy. So if you are watching television or watching things on your computer or watching some kind of feed, please look for things that are positive and uplifting. There are spiritual channels. There are channels that have comedies. Laughter is good for the soul. You know, Bernie Siegel wrote the book about laughing your way to health. He had a major health crisis, was in the hospital. He was told he wouldn't make it. And he watched all the comedies he could, and he laughed and laughed and laughed. Because you know what happens when you laugh? You're shaking your belly and your chest. You're stimulating the production of neurotransmitters. You're increasing blood flow in the body. It's good for your body. So watch things that are positive, things that make you laugh. And whatever you do, please up your game spiritually. Let's double down on meditation and prayer. Let's double down on singing those songs that lift us up. I wish I could hear your beautiful voice singing. An uplifting hymn right now, Cynthia. We need that right now. We need all the uplift we can get. And spirituality, whatever practice you have, double down. I don't tell anybody how to believe. Just believe.
Sure.
Peace and light.
But you know, because, and I think that what the point that you're making about light is so important, because in the Scandinavian countries, it's dark. Literally, it will look like it is at 8 in the morning. It can look like, well, it, say by the afternoon, it can look like it's midnight.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just, it can't.
I've had clients from that part of the world who have told me stories. One of my clients from Sweden, northern part of Sweden, had his father hospitalized who almost died because of the low light, the endless night.
and it shuts down the brain's capacity to produce neurotransmitters.
Dr. Wade, I stayed over for the first time when I was 14. I was over there for several months, staying with family friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked at the amount of drinking. The amount of drinking. And then when I went back, when I was older, and, you know, subsequent visits, I said, wow. I did not, you know, the darkness, the light. Wait a minute. And, I mean, because, like, the bars were, like, open all the time. And people were, like, drinking all the time. And then I had to think, you know.
Now, the problem with the alcohol is it depletes the brain. Let me think.
Yeah, but you. But, yeah, but. So explain that. Because some people, you know, will try to self-medicate, right, during this holiday season. And they think that drinking.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes.
Right?
So glad you brought that up, Santita. People go and drink because temporarily it makes you feel better. But guess what? When the alcohol has done its work, what it's done is deplete your brain. So as hard as it may be during this holiday season, the thing that will help you is drink less, because alcohol also creates a diuretic hormone, which makes you urinate more. And that urination from alcohol can actually wash a lot of vitamins and minerals that you need out of your body. And it shuts down vital nutrients in your brain. So we have to be aware. Temporarily, yes, you're going to feel better if you are getting high off alcohol or something else. But the brain isn't designed to uptake a lot of alcohol. EPOH, the hormone, the drug that's in the alcohol, works against the brain in the long run. So if you're going to have alcohol, keep it light, keep it infrequent, very, very light. Just, you know, it's holiday, we're going to have a toast, end of story. Instead, drink all you can of the healthy teas. Green tea, not at bedtime, during the day, because it has caffeine too, but it's lighter. But the teeing is actually good for you. Drink, you know, nice, clean water. Be very, very, very well hydrated. All those things help. Alcohol dehydrates you. When you're dehydrated, the body doesn't have all the fluids it needs to cleanse and stay healthy. So what we're doing is we're boosting the immune system. We're boosting all the neurotransmitters that make us feel good. Now, the last thing, we talk about the mind and we talk about the spirit. Positive thoughts, positive words. If you don't do anything except hold on to positive, affirming thoughts. I am light and energy. You are light and energy. I am love. You are love. We are the children of the Most High. You are a child of the Most High. I am a child of the Most High. Whatever your word is for the Most High, use that loving word. And please lift everybody else up as you lift yourself up. Call with that positive word. Be the one who says, you know, I'm just calling to tell you. I love you and what you mean to me, how you've contributed to my life. When you acknowledge somebody else, do you know that you get a boost in your brain, Santita? And
you know,
Thanksgiving, give thanks for those who have been there for you on the journey.
That's what I want to ask you about. I only have about 3 minutes left here. What about, you know, last year this time and in previous years when we've just when we've talked, people were like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to get along with everybody during Thanksgiving? Oh my gosh, I've got to go to this dinner. Oh my God. Now this year, we're singing a different tune. It's like, wait a minute. If I could just have the opportunity to be with someone who works my nerves, but I love them. If I could have the opportunity to have so-and-so back at the table, but now they are gone.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
How do we
gratefulness.
Yeah, I mean, before.
It's about being grateful.
Thank you. I mean, thank you. Help me with that, because before we get there, You know, before you bury somebody, before you have, really, we do have travel restrictions. They're not being mandated, but everybody, you don't want to be a COVID-19 spreader for your loved ones. You don't. You really don't. And it just, nobody's going to eat with a mask on. Prayerfully, right. Please be prayerful and have the information. Dr. Wade, these last 2 minutes belong to you. Help us with this.
Thanksgiving is about being thankful. For holidays mean holy days. Do everything you can right every night, starting tonight, all the way through January 1st. And for me, this is a practice I do every day, Santita. Mm. Write your list of all that you're grateful for. Because when you're focused on gratitude and gratefulness, you know, we have a research center here at the University of California, Berkeley, called the Center for the Study of Greater Good. And they study things like forgiveness, gratefulness. And they have found that when you are forgiving, when you are grateful, your brain starts producing more of those good neurotransmitters, which boosts your immune system, boosts your mood. So if you just focus on what you have to be grateful for, that you do have food, you do have a family, you do have friends, you do have somebody you can talk to, even if you live alone and are feeling lonely and depressed and anxious. Make a list of what you do have. Mm. It is important to focus on, because most of us, I don't have this, I can't do this, I can't go. No. Please, I beg you, this simple practice. And if there's anyone you haven't forgiven, find compassion in your heart for that person. Everybody's doing the best they can with what they know so far. And with any luck, we're going to know more as we keep going on this journey, especially if you're a Santita Jackson listener. You're going to learn a lot of powerful things.
Wait a minute. Can we see you this weekend? I've got less than a minute.
This weekend, I won't have a live class, but if you want the next one, just send me an email at love@docwade.com. We do have a powerful training coming up second Saturday of December, and it is all about not just surviving the holidays, but thriving. But, Santita, you know what I do have? Oh, my goodness.
This I got 30 Saturday, seconds.
We have Surviving the School Year. Please go to survivingtheschoolyear.com. Find out how you can help survive this school year and help the children in your life, help the parents in your life. Santita, that is it's a lineup that's unbelievable. I will be speaking on that platform. It's a global program, and it starts
Surviving the school year.com, everybody.
Get survivingtheschoolyear.com. Just hit me back at love@docwade.com. I'll hook you up.
Love you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving. See you on Monday,
Happy
everybody. Love you.